This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte touts the fact that we're one of the fastest growing tech hubs in the country, but Amazon left Charlotte off its list of top 20 contenders to be its second North American headquarters because we just don't have enough tech workers to meet the internet giant's needs. Well, now there's a mixed message for you, so let's put some numbers to it. According to Eli Portillo and Catherine Peralta at the Charlotte Observer, our current pool of tech talent stands at about 47,150, and most of those are fintech or financial tech experts. The Raleigh area, which did make Amazon's shortlist, has about 61,000 tech workers, though some of the other cities on the list have far fewer than Charlotte. All of this raises some important questions. Why is a city's technology workforce so important for future growth? How many does a city the size of Charlotte actually need? What are we doing to increase that number, to support those people, to educate them, and to attract and retain them? We look at all of that this hour, and we begin with a 30,000-foot look from Wells Fargo senior economist Mark Vittner, who says we need at least 50,000 more tech jobs to be competitive. Welcome back, Mark. Good to see you again.
Oh, good to be back with you.
Before we talk about tech, after that long setup there, I want to talk about the economy in general and what happened last week. Last week, the stock market had its worst week in, 2 years, just days after the January trading ended, and it revealed the best monthly stock performance since March of 2016. And this morning, we are told that markets around the world are opening lower against fears of inflation and recession and all that kind of stuff. The market is not the economy, but we know that an unhealthy market can impact the economy just as economic fears can impact the market. So were there forces in the economy that led to last week's collapse? Did it make sense?
Well, there was no real mention of recession. I mean, it was, if anything, what happened with the economic data was too good, and that raised some concerns that maybe inflation was going to pick up. We had a jobs report on Friday with 200,000 net new jobs being added in the month of January, and then the average hourly earnings rose to 2.9%. And this is something that folks have been waiting for, wanting to happen. It's just that now that it did, it's like, oh, it happened all at once.
And who are these people that want to lose money? Who are these people?
not the stock market, but the increase in wages. But the stock market, you had mentioned that it was the worst week in over 2 years. We hadn't had a bad week in over 2 years, so so we were due. And I had been telling folks the last few weeks, and I'm not a market guy, but I said that one of the things that was beginning to get me a little nervous was that all of this hype around Bitcoin, any company that tied itself to Bitcoin suddenly got a pop and their stock began to rise. And when you see that kind of momentum investing, it's no different than the tulip bulb craze, that people are buying stocks simply for no other reason than they think they're going to go higher. They have no basis to understand why they're going to go higher. It's just the greater fool theory. And whenever that happens, we usually see a correction.
The tulip bulb, that's an old reference. The tulip bulb phrase happened in Holland in the 1600s?
Yes. And Bitcoin kind of reminds me of tulip bulbs. I'm not quite sure that you could use tulip bulbs to buy things back then,
right?
And theoretically, you could use Bitcoin to buy things now, but the volume of transactions is just very, very low, and it doesn't seem to have any basis.
So let's talk about these fears of inflation. Why are they there? Corporate earnings are up, but salaries aren't. Are prices rising that quickly?
Well, we've also seen a weakening in the dollar. The dollar's been coming down, and as global economies have picked up, and that raises the price of imports. We've seen the price of oil go up, and the price of oil, although it looks like it's topped out at around 65 and it's begun to come back a little bit. But all of those things have added into inflation fears, and inflation is likely to pick up. But the really ironic thing here is that for the last 8 years, the Fed has been very frustrated that inflation's been too low. It's been 1.5, right, and they would like it to be 2. And because if it's too low, that's typically a sign that demand is lagging. And,
right,
and so I don't think there's that much to worry here. I worry about here, I think that we've got some follow-through on Friday's sell-off. A 5% pullback. It looks like we'll have that this morning in total, when including what we had on Friday and a few days before that. But that would, we haven't had a correction like that in over 2 years. There's nothing unusual for having a 10 or even a 20% correction, because what happens when stock prices go up and up and up is people begin to trade them on the relative value and saying, well, you know, I know this looks expensive, but relative to this company, we're cheap. And it begins to make no sense. And so you get a correction, everything resets, and we get a more fundamentally solid financial market.
So I noticed this morning you haven't broken it out into a sweat, so I guess we're okay.
Yeah, I'm doing just fine. I did put on the bulls today because I want to get them running, and so I got my bullish suspenders on.
Okay, on to the topic at hand, which is technology. And you said, I quoted you a minute ago, saying that you think that Charlotte needs 50,000 more tech jobs, and yet you were still surprised that we didn't make Amazon's shortlist. Why on both counts?
Well, I was a little surprised we didn't make the list because you look at the number of metropolitan areas that have a million or more people and have a hub airport and are seeing more people move to them than move away, and you're quickly down to just 16 areas. So we're the only one on that list other than Seattle that meets all of those criteria and did not make the second round. So I was a little surprised by that. The other thing that surprised me was that the Washington, D.C. area had three areas mentioned. It's one metropolitan area, right? But Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, and suburban Maryland. And so that tells me that they've suddenly come to number one. I felt all along that Atlanta was the city to beat because Atlanta adds about 100,000 people a year. They have the big hub airport. They're the home of UPS, which is a big critical supplier for Amazon. And they're the center of the payments processing industry in the United States and home to a lot of cybersecurity firms as well. So there's a lot of expertise that they could get there. In Charlotte's case, they would get they still had access to a significant pool of talent. In the case of Charlotte, that really hit all of those areas. Charlotte is in many ways a mini Atlanta.
Right. According to an internal postmortem report on the Amazon pitch by the Charlotte Regional Partnership, they made the pitch. Our pool of tech talent is less than half the average, and yet we are one of the fastest growing tech hubs in the country. So given that Amazon won't be up and running in any city they choose for years at full tilt boogie, it seemed that we would have a sufficient level to start with already, and we'd have time to grow that base either locally or probably bringing people in from around the country or a combination of the two. So given the reality of that, is that really the reason? Is tech talent or the absence of enough tech talent really the reason?
Well, I think that it is a real justification for leaving us off the list. I mean, I think that I can understand where they came from. I really feel that in Charlotte's case, and people will laugh and scream about this, but I think that Chapel Hill, Duke, NC State are Charlotte area institutions. I never got the rationale that saying, oh, they're Raleigh-based institutions. I work with people, hardly anyone that I work with comes from UNC Charlotte, which is here. There are significant numbers, but given how many people graduate from Chapel Hill, Duke and NC State, and it's usually Chapel or Wake Forest. Hey, all of these schools are so close to Charlotte that they should probably be a part of our pitch.
Talk to me about why this is important in the first place. Why is it so important that we have a critical mass of tech experts, that any growing, healthy city has these people available to them?
Well, the tech sector, if you look at the recovery since the Great Recession, tech has accounted for 37% of all U.S. GDP growth since the last recession. About another third has come from energy, and we did have some exposure to that with Duke and the power plant construction boom that was early on and some of the companies that were here, although we're on the downside of that right now. The rest of the economy really limped along with just 1% economic growth. And if you look at the financial sector, employment is now back above where it was prior to the crisis, but just barely so. Whereas growth in the technology sector, that's been where most of our job growth has come from. If tech has accounted for 37% of U.S. economic growth, a community that has not seen that proportion of growth if it hasn't accounted for 37% of their region's growth, they're falling behind. And that's one of the reasons why I think so many people thought that they had a shot at Amazon. They got 238 applications because tech accounted for more than a third of our growth. Virtually every part of the country has seen a lot of growth in tech relative to where they were 10 years ago.
So you mentioned you think that Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill, and the universities located really are in our backyard. They're really Charlotte schools, is what you said a second ago.
I would never think of going to school someplace and staying there. I mean, I went to school at the University of Georgia. I had no plans to stay in Athens. I mean, and I went to graduate school at the University of Florida. I had no plans to stay in Gainesville. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was where I went to school.
Okay.
And I think that's the same way that people view Chapel Hill and Raleigh, although there are other things going on in Raleigh, but I think most folks that go to school there do not intend on staying there.
So perhaps it's perception. Forbes.com, the contributing writers Joel Kotkin and Mark Schill point out that from 2006 to 2016, tech businesses in Charlotte expanded their job count by 62%. Between 2014 and 2016, it grew by 18%, the fastest in the nation. Over the last 10 years, the Charlotte Metro has logged a 23%, a lot of numbers here, a 23% increase in the number of STEM workers. And that put us second on their list behind the Bay Area, San Francisco, in terms of tech job growth. But you point out that Charlotte ranks 26th among top markets in terms of the supply of tech talent and well down the list of cities for a number of tech degrees awarded. And you said that the lack of a renowned research institution in the Charlotte area is the problem. So if Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill is in the backyard, is it simply a perception problem from outsiders who don't understand that?
Well, I think that it is a perception problem and that you don't suddenly become a renowned institution. It doesn't happen overnight. Reputations take a long time to build. We have all the things right, and one of the things that I mentioned at the forum I was speaking at was that probably the best way we could jumpstart that is to partner with a renowned institution that would build on the strengths that we have in Charlotte, and actually create some other areas. I mean, we're one of the largest cities in the country that doesn't have a medical school,
right?
And so that certainly makes some sense for us. And we do have some very, very leading institutions.
Mark Vittner is senior economist at Wells Fargo. And to help us further explore the educational component of this and the training component of this and exploring Charlotte as a tech-friendly place, we welcome Fatma Mili. She's the dean and professor in the College of Computing and Informatics at UNC Charlotte. Welcome to the program. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Susan Gann Carroll is Director of Career and Technical Education at Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. Thank you for joining us.
Here.
And Dan Roselli is back. He's co-founder of Packard Place, an entrepreneur hub in Charlotte, and co-founder and managing director of Queen City FinTech, an accelerator program for FinTech upstarts. Welcome back.
Thanks, Mike.
Fatma, we don't have much time in this segment, about a minute, so I may have to ask you a question and let you think about the answer while we go to a break. But UNC Charlotte Chancellor Philip Dubois wrote a column for the op-ed page of The Observer in which he said, an even more substantial investment is necessary to help strengthen UNC Charlotte's higher education leadership position within our region's economy. And he pointed out that UNC Charlotte's College of Computing and Informatics is the largest program of its kind in the state and among the largest in the nation, graduating students proficient in computer science, software and information systems, data science, and bioinformatics. You already knew all of that. So when we come back, I want to get an answer. Do you think that Amazon understands that about UNC Charlotte? Do you think other companies understand that about UNC Charlotte and therefore greater Charlotte? We'll come back and get an answer to that in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about technology and tech jobs in Charlotte and whether we have enough and how we grow them and how we sustain them, how we attract people here, how we educate them, how we support them, how we keep them here once they've arrived. Dan Roselli is here, co-founder of Packard Place and Queen City FinTech. Susan Gann Carroll is the director of the Career and Tech Education Program at CMS. Mark Vittner, senior economist at Wells Fargo. And Fatma Mili is the dean of and professor in the College of Computing and Informatics at UNC Charlotte. I mentioned a second ago, Fatma, the article that Phil Dubois, the chancellor at UNC Charlotte, wrote about how great a computing school we have at UNC Charlotte. You know that. The students know that. You attract students here because of that. Does the outside world know that? Do they think of UNC Charlotte that way?
Good morning. It depends on which outside world. So I came to UNC Charlotte this August.
You came from Purdue, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And coming here, the perception of UNC Charlotte, the perception of the College of Computing and Informatics is that it's an excellent school, it's a research, it's very well renowned for the research that its faculty do, and it has a much stronger reputation as a research institution. So maybe if I were to say one thing is a request, please let's stop saying that we do not have a research university in Charlotte. We do have a research university in Charlotte. One of the things that one of my colleagues has done recently is looked at the statistics of the funding of the faculty, and more than 80% of the faculty at in the College of Computing in UNC Charlotte are funded. Their research is funded. This is higher than NC State. The level of funding, the average level of funding of our faculty is also higher than NC State, yet we keep repeating that we do not have a research university. We do have a research university. It is here.
That's aimed at you, Mark, I think.
But it's not aimed at me. We're in agreement. I mean, I said reputations take a long time to establish.
We create that reputation. We are the radio station of Charlotte. We have to start repeating that message. We have to respond every time somebody says we don't have a research university. We do. We shouldn't go to different places to get our talent. The talent is here. The research is here. And it is true that, so before the break, you mentioned a number of statistics. So CCI graduates 25% of all undergraduate degrees in computing from the UNC system. One out of four comes out of here. Exactly. Okay. It's the biggest program in the system. 30% of all computing degrees in the system, which includes undergraduate and graduate, comes from here. Our mission is different. Our focus is different. So in terms of the students that we recruit, and our focus is on educating Charlotte and the North Carolina students. It's a different mission. And in that respect, I don't think we should be losing our soul in computing for every single thing. We have to remember what is our mission and are we accomplishing that. We have to be proud of our university. We have to be proud of the mission that our university has and not question it every time we don't have the numbers.
Do you agree with the figure that Mark threw out, or I threw it, Mark, that Mark threw out previously, that we need 50,000 more tech people in Charlotte?
I agree more with your statement that we need to be looking forward, in the sense that by the time Amazon comes to wherever place, mm-hmm. and the numbers will follow.
Because if we need 50,000 more workers to have critical mass, as I understand it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, UNC Charlotte is on track to graduate 3,500 students with bachelor's, master's, and doctorate degrees in computer technology, computer sciences, every year. 3,500, if we're short 50,000, I don't have to have a supercomputer to figure this out. It's going to take a long time to reach that number. Are we going to have to bring these people in?
Well, if I can also add something, because I think our four-year universities make a huge impact, but I think there's a part of the market that we're leaving out, and that is not just what we're creating in the high school arena, but the fact that a lot of our IT jobs, you can actually, if you go through our software development pipeline, for example, and pathway in Charlotte Mecklenburg schools, you can actually walk out with certificates that will let you walk right into a $60,000 job in IT. And so I think there's levels of development. So there's that going right to work, but then there's also the two-year degree and the four-year degree. So I think you have to look at the wide range of where we are training folks and what we are training them for.
Okay.
And the 50,000 number was in reference to what was apparently to meet Amazon's guideline. Not that I said we needed that today. That was what I think they were, and I think that in order to meet their cutoff. And I so that in my mind is not a goal that we need to be at this year, next year. And that was
So when we talk about these tech jobs, are we talking what are we talking about? Because we have 3 degree levels at UNC Charlotte, and plus you can walk out with a certificate from CMS or I guess CPCC as well. At what level are the greatest number of these jobs? What do they require, the greatest numbers of these jobs? Do they require a doctorate? Do they require a master's? What do they require?
What we're hearing from our business partners is, in fact, that a majority of these positions, they really want to see us develop this pipeline where students can walk out and really what they need to know is how to learn a language. So just like you would learn Spanish or French, that this is my understanding from the partners that we've been in discussion with. So it's not saying that there's no need for a four-year, but there is a huge need for kids to walk out with something that they can take that next step, and either they are already in the marketplace or they're in the marketplace and continuing their education. But there's different levels. Now, are we going to be able to create 50,000? No, we're not going to be able to create 50,000 in a year. That's not, but we do have 4,000 students enrolled in some kind of tech program this year. So we're doing that and then blending it down into the middle school to create a broader exposure.
You agree with that, Fatma?
I would like to add something. So I think we are, we're talking about two different things and very often putting them together fuzzies up the picture.
Okay.
So on the one hand, we're asking about how many tech workers do we need? And the other side, we say, we don't have a research university. So if you want tech workers who are able to perform a job today, you don't need a research university. But if you look at that's not entirely true. It's a whole ecosystem, and you cannot have one without the other. So, again, we talk about the perception of what UNC Charlotte is. Everybody, all of our business partners know us for the producer of IT talent, for the producer of excellent IT talent. And our undergraduate students, by the time they graduate there, each one of them has multiple offers before they even graduate. There is a misunderstanding a little bit of what happens after that. Do you really need a master's degree? Do you really need a PhD degree? But it's really a whole ecosystem. You cannot slice it and take one without the other.
And can I add on to that really quickly? So if you think of tech talent, it's just too simple to say tech talent. It's a whole spectrum, right? And if you look at, you've heard me make this comment before, I think tech jobs are the blue-collar jobs of the future. They were like working in the automobile plant, right? It takes a skill set, but it may not take a college degree. I think CMS and what they're doing are going to have to provide thousands of people into that pipeline. I think what Fatma's doing at the university in terms of master's and PhD level, that is all needed in the spectrum. Even things like Tech Talent South, which we haven't mentioned yet, producing 1,000 students a year. CPCC is producing a couple thousand a year. It's the whole ecosystem adding to it. One university, one institution is never going to be able to provide the whole ecosystem.
I didn't need to mention Tech Talent South because you're wearing their T-shirt this morning. Dan Roselli is the co-founder of Packard Place and the co-founder and managing director of Queen City FinTech. Compare, if you can, because you deal with people from all over the place in your organizations, compare the impact of what's going on in the research triangle on that area to the impact of what's going on at UNC Charlotte and this area. Is there a comparison?
Well, there is. I think they have a longer history at this. I think this is still new for Charlotte. If you look at where we are in our tech talent journey, I would say we're 6 or 7 years in. I remember 7 years ago when people would come to us and say, no one understands there's a tech community in Charlotte at all. It's part of the reason we started Packard Place and the Accelerator program is to build community. And I think we're making great strides. If you think of an analogy, we're like that runner who's not at the front of the pack, but is running faster than anyone else. And we will get to the front of the pack. Part of what I think we need is some time to do that. If people listening are asking, are we doing the right things? I think the answer is yes. I think there's a lot to that perception, right? Perception always lags reality. I think the perception of Charlotte's tech talent is lagging the reality of where we are and how fast we're going right now.
So you mentioned NC State as a competitor, I guess, or a producer of tech talent, Fatma Mili. I'm assuming that UNC Chapel Hill produces some graduates, as does Duke. When you have three institutions in an area turning out tech talent, can you compete with that at UNC Charlotte, or does it matter, given that these people, as Mark said, don't necessarily stay in the area they graduated from college from? They go where the jobs are. Does it matter that we're not turning out as many because we haven't got as many universities?
Can we compete with NC State and
with the
UNC
region.
Chapel
can we,
Hill?
Can we compete with that region in that area because they have three schools turning out graduates?
We don't think of it as a competition.
Okay.
We have complementary missions, and we all have a mission to serve North Carolina. And we think that we have a very unique role in UNC Charlotte. Again, first of all, our mission of access and excellence. We strongly believe that you cannot have access without excellence. It's not worth it having access if it's not something that is excellent. And in that respect, we are very proud in UNC Charlotte to have that. It's much harder than selecting the top 10% and then providing a research enterprise with that. The other thing that we have at UNC Charlotte is the youth and the speed and the agility, in the sense that we may not be in the front of the pack, but we are running much faster. This is a very innovative university, and this is something that is very hard to see from the outside.
One of the things that the tech world seems to have, that we have an impression of, that it's mostly male-dominated. Would that be accurate, Dan?
It still is.
All right, but we have the head of computer and informatics at UNC Charlotte is a woman, and the person running the career and tech ed department at CMS is a woman. What's the deal there? How did you break through? And how are women doing, and how do you attract them into what is perceived to be a male-dominated field?
This is a very complex topic. It will take another session to do this.
It's not so complex for us.
Okay.
So we look at there's all kinds of programs. First of all, there's Girls Who Code. So there are burgeoning programs that are not-for-profits out there that we work to partner with in order to help our girls begin to see themselves in the industry. We also look to partner through work-based learning opportunities, so whether that's internships, job shadows, speakers, and we work to attract folks that, so every child sees themselves in who we bring in or that they visit. The other thing that we are exploring, and this is being done in the West Coast, is having some girl-only classes where in the middle school they can begin to develop that confidence and they're not so self-conscious about themselves as they are in middle school and in high school, but they can begin to build that confidence in their own gender group and then begin to infiltrate together.
Is that where this begins, the interest in technology, beyond having your own iPad and your own cell phone and gaming on your own Xbox or gaming on the internet? Does the interest in actually taking part in the creation of and the understanding of these products begin in grade school, junior highs,
yes,
high school?
So I think what we're hearing for all of our pathways is that our business partners are wanting us to push down further and further. For our funding source, we can push down as far as sixth grade. And so we have now in 22 middle schools, we have App Creator or Computer Science for Innovation, which is meant to really introduce kids to programming and to that exciting design piece. Then we've built out in this last year 13 software development pathways. We're a little behind on the network administration and the soft computer engineering piece because it just takes a little bit more time to get instructors and teachers who are qualified to teach those to the depth and the level that we need for our students so that they can be successful on the back end on those certifications. But yes, it really does call for us, and it calls for parents. I'm a parent of a 10-year-old girl. For Christmas, we bought her a purse that you can program, and you can program it from your phone, just trying to ignite that interest. And so I think parents have to look at it. It's more than your child wanting to play a game. It's more about helping them explore that opportunity of putting the game together.
So you're the director of career and technical education at CMS. How many students are there in the program, and are those numbers growing?
So we are staying fairly steady. So we have about 49,000 students, middle school and high school. Now remember, there's 147,000 students total in CMS. So we are capturing a large portion in that career and technical education.
Over a third, evidently.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now you also have to remember that not only is our IT community in high demand for jobs, but there are other pathways and industry sectors that are also coming to us saying we need employees. So we're doing our best to address that with our high need pathways.
So I think you said 49,000 mm-hmm. students involved in this program. This program includes, though, classes in welding and firefighting, cooking, anatomy, physiology, graphic arts, mechanical engineering, architectural drafting, business marketing, nursing, etc. How many focus on computers?
So we have in our pathway right now, we have 600 kids that are actually in what is called Computer Programming 1. And those students will then matriculate into two more courses. The pathway actually starts with AP Computer Science, so advanced placement. And we are actually blowing that out for 17-18 school year. So you're going to see a lot of freshmen and sophomore taking their first AP class actually through CTE, which is very exciting. And then kids will go through the Computer Programming 1, where they begin to just learn languages. So they learn CSINT, they learn Java, they learn Visual Basic, .NET. To name a few, SQL is where they end up in our local course offering, which we are the first in North Carolina to offer a software development fundamentals course. And in that course, students by the end of that course will have earned a Microsoft Technical Assistance software fundamental assistant or a database fundamental certificate. And both of those are very marketable and great beginner certifications. So I would say that we're developing that pipeline. But we have gone from we've probably doubled the number of schools where this pathway is actually taking place.
How many kids go on to college in this field from your program? I have 10 seconds.
Okay, we have approximately 96% of our CTE concentrators, which okay. I can explain that later, right. Who go on to a four-year degree.
We have to take a break. That's Susan Gann Carroll, Director of Career and Tech Ed at CMS. We'll come back with more in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, along with Dan Roselli of Packard Place in Queen City FinTech, Susan Gann Carroll with CMS, Fatma Mili, the dean professor in the College of Computing and Informatics at UNC Charlotte, and Mark Vittner, senior economist at Wells Fargo. There's no gnashing of teeth over the Amazon loss here, but we are talking about the number of tech students who go on to tech jobs and how it begins. And I asked you a question a second ago, Susan Gann Carroll, how many people go on from your program to higher education in this? Are there enough people being funneled in from CMS who are college ready and qualified to go into your program right now at UNC Charlotte?
It depends on how you count it. So the enrollment in computing and informatics has been growing and doubled in the last 10 years. So this is a trend, a national trend, in the sense that the interest in computing has been growing exponentially and growing much faster than we can accommodate that. So in terms of resources, we are struggling with that growth and trying to accommodate that growth. Whether that is sufficient or not depends on the angle that you take. So you raise the issue of women in computing, and I will add to that the underrepresented minorities in computing as well. So the issue of equity in education and representation and being an urban university, an urban public university who serves the community in which we live, mm-hmm. It is very important for us that the student population that we have is a representative of our community.
So when Amazon said no to Charlotte, we don't like to be told no. And when Amazon said no to Charlotte, it was a lot of navel gazing and necessary postmortem analysis of what we did wrong and what's wrong with Charlotte and what's wrong with our tech sector. And I'm not sure there's anything wrong with it. But what did have the three, Dan with Packer Place and the Queen City FinTech, you with CMS, Susan, and you, Fatma, with UNC Charlotte, have your organizations been involved in these discussions about what we could do so this doesn't happen again, so that the word gets out that we do have people, we do have talent. Maybe it's not enough for one particular company. Are you working toward changing not only the reality of that, but the impression of that?
So, Dan. Mike, there's two organizations we haven't mentioned yet. One is the Charlotte Area Technology Collaborative, a group of executives working on helping to build this. They have the Woman in IT program. They have a STEM program for children. The community is coming together to help make this happen. And I think, you know, I'm also on the Workforce Development Board, Charlotte Works. We've talked about pathways, right? Charlotte Works was heavily involved in that discussion. And I think one of the things coming out of the Amazon discussion is an understanding when we talk about economic and social mobility, and I know that's a different program, but one of the things I'd like for listeners to think about is there's a connection between the economic and social mobility question in Charlotte and tech talent pipeline. They are inextricably linked. And you talk about what CMS is doing and how that feeds in. We need to figure that out because it's economically hurting the rest of Charlotte. We have these huge assets in our people and our students that we are not maximizing and putting in the right place. That's why Charlotte Works launched this Career for All's platform, which has a tech talent pipeline in it.
Okay. You put this Amazon setback into perspective, Dan, when you said that growing a tech community is like farming. Some of it is just about giving us time to grow up. So we weren't ready for this one, so we shouldn't freak out? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't think we should freak out. I think we're on the right path. I think perception is lagging reality. I don't think we should let up at all. I think this should make us reinvigorate that challenge.
Is there a reason to hurry up?
I think we should be hurrying as fast as we can. I think if you look at what we're doing in CMS and the resources needed there at UNC Charlotte, at CPCC, every person listening to this, if they're in corporate Charlotte, should be asking what their company is doing. How can they involve? How can they connect? How can they add gas to this engine? Everyone needs to put their shoulder to the wheel.
Do we need to add gas? You've said there isn't a hotter market than Charlotte when it comes to tech entrepreneurship.
Well, I think we can always challenge ourselves to stay on top and do better, right? I think we are one of the hottest markets. Mm-hmm. I'm just never satisfied, right? I think we always want to push ourselves to do better.
If we are the hottest market in terms of tech entrepreneurship, is that what's going to take? Is entrepreneurship what's going to attract the most tech talent? Or is it going to be Amazon's and Banks of America and Wells Fargo?
I think it's a yes and.
Yeah, well, I tell you, one of the things that I pointed out was that really frustrated me was when we had the MetLife decision. And MetLife said we're going to put the financial jobs in the sales jobs in Charlotte and we're going to put the tech jobs in Raleigh. And we have to change that perception, particularly since some of the projections that are out there, and this was shared by Vikram Pandit, who used to run Citicorp, said that he thinks that at least a third of the jobs in the financial sector will be gone within 10 years. So you have 63,000 people working in the financial sector. So many of that jobs are going to be replaced by fintech jobs. So it is we want to make sure that we're on the upside of that transition.
You mentioned that a lot of these tech jobs can be seen perhaps going forward as the blue-collar jobs of tomorrow, replacing auto workers and things like that. CMS says their career and technical education curriculum prepares young people for a wide range of high-wage, high-skill, high-demand careers. Is that accurate, Dan?
I think it's accurate and needs to continue to move forward. I think the right things are happening. I don't think we're at the top of the mountain yet. I think you have to understand that we have a clear vision as a community of where we're going. Some of the right things are happening, and we need more resources to make that happen.
But, you know, we heard for years that if you go into computers, you will always have a job, and it will be a high-paying job mm-hmm. because you've paid for this education and you're an expert in the field, et cetera. But it seems to me, just from a layman's point of view, just watching this happen, that these jobs have become commodities and that the people hiring these people are always looking for the cheapest, the least expensive talent that they can find. And so they outsource that talent to India or China or someplace else, or through the visa program, they bring people in for a period of time who will essentially work long hours for little pay, and then they go home. Is there a future in this for Americans who need high-paying salaries.
I think there is. So I think part of that is happening because we don't have the pipeline of talent. And I think that once we develop that, so I think...
Why don't we have the pipeline of talent?
Well, I think for us, the pathway strategy, so I came in fall of last year, and so we have been developing this pathway strategy. I mentioned concentrators. So part of us being able to develop a really good pipeline is for kids to be able to take those classes and for schedules to fit that. So without going too deep in the weeds, what I think is the important message is that our principals are very engaged in this work. We have opened the door and looked at how they're offering CTE to our students, and we're beginning to make a map so that they understand how to build their master schedule so that all priorities are met for students. And that means that more students will be able to get to that final course and that more students will be walking across the stage with that second piece of paper.
So I want to get Fatma Mili's impression of this, because you're not from around here. I can tell from your accent you're from Purdue. So...
I hope nobody from Purdue is listening.
So, what are we lacking here? What piece of this puzzle are we missing? Why don't we have enough people? Why do we have to ship these jobs overseas? Why do we have to bring people in? Why aren't there enough people who grew up here ready to do these jobs?
So, I won't start with the premise that we're lacking something.
Okay.
One thing that I wanted to mention and to follow up on the economic mobility, in the College of Computing, 30% of our undergraduate students are Pell Grant recipients. So that really says something about who we are and that what it is that we are trying to do. And you asked the question earlier about women in computing, and I said it's a much broader issue of who are we educating, and we're not as broad as we would like to be, and this is something that is part of our mission and that we are working very hard at reaching out to all the schools within Charlotte, because right now our access is a bit unbalanced.
Is the opportunity going to grow? Right now I'm told that there are cutbacks, or they have already taken place in the H-1B visa program, which bring in labor from other countries in certain skill-dependent industries like tech. And the fact that they're cutting back on these visas may lead to shortages in this area. Does that open the door of opportunity for, if we're ready, for people here?
So the opportunities are there. Anybody who has technical skills does find jobs. We're not anywhere near, there is no issue of people not finding positions. It is true that the job market is changing, and it's changing very fast. And this is where the full spectrum of education that we talked about earlier becomes extremely important. People in the industry right now are working at jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago. It's the same thing for students graduating today. They will be facing lots of changes in the landscape, and they have to be lifelong learners. They have to continuously be updating their skills.
So let me share with you some things that have come in from listeners as we've been talking. Aaron emails, should we be rethinking the framework of public education? We are literally changing the way in which we interact and interface with the world around us. You're the public education person, Susan. Should we?
I'm not exactly sure what the intent of the question is and what they're trying to ask, but I think that we are in the process of redefining how we educate our students. So CTE is probably one of the most interactive, life-relevant courses that kids get excited about their career and technical education courses, because it gets them in touch with what their future could be. And so I think that that's one of the things that North Carolina has done that other states have not necessarily done, is they have made a huge push into the high school and middle school areas so that our students are getting exposed at a very early age to what it is that they want to do. I think that in and of itself is very innovative, to have that happening. And it's such a wide, 22,000 of our students are middle school students. That's amazing. They should be coming into high school with some idea of what it is that they want to concentrate in a pathway.
Dana on Facebook, my daughter just completed the AP Computer Science class as a high school junior. Sure wish there were more classes she could take in high school. Our high school had to pull the teacher from the school system IT department. Is that a problem? Not enough teachers?
That is a problem. So one of the things that makes principals the most nervous about putting in courses that are in high demand is that they're in high demand. So it's very difficult to attract someone in for a teacher's salary to come in. I did it. I left industry to be a teacher. And so there are wonderful people, and we have amazing teachers who are getting skilled up and trained up. We actually will have that AP Computer Science course offered in 13 high schools, and then they will be able to take AP Computer Science A, which is the next level up in that sequence.
David on Facebook.
I was just going to say, go back to the comment about resources, right? Mm-hmm. Why would we accept as a community CMS having demand of students who want to be technically trained and not giving CMS the resources needed to go do that?
Right.
You want to talk about one of the issues we've uncovered. That's one we have to fix. That's inexcusable.
Okay. David on Facebook. I'm so glad to hear someone standing up for UNC Charlotte. Those outside our state seem to see it as a much more substantial and formidable institution than do our own local citizens. It is not, big capital letters there, it is not just a backyard fallback school. You have a big smile on your face.
Thank you.
You'd like that phone number and address after the show, too?
So Mark emails, when I heard Amazon was worried about the lack of tech talent, I thought they really meant we don't want to compete with the higher financial industry salaries. IT salaries are not cheap. Also, all schools should be training people for heavy-duty programming for secure applications like Java and .NET. What about that? We have a substantial fintech population here, and a lot of banks, big banks, and they require this talent. And I guess to get that talent, they pay higher salaries. Is that putting off to some people like Amazon who want to do it on the?
That may be part of it. I really think that they needed a market that had a high degree of specialization in logistics technologies, and that's where Atlanta really excels. It is one of the nation's largest logistics hubs, and you have many of the software firms that are involved in the logistic industry have operations there.
According to Forbes, there may be a silver lining in all of this. They report that the most recent data on STEM jobs in science, technology, engineering, and math suggests that tech jobs, with some exceptions, are shifting to smaller, generally more affordable places. Would that seem to put us in a better position?
That is true, and we've seen that. You saw that with this past year with Credit Karma that doubled the size of their operation here, and it's a fintech company. They came here because there's a lot of financial professionals in Charlotte that they can hire that have a tech background. When you go out to San Francisco, the unemployment rate there is under 3%. The housing costs are so high that unless you're a high-income tech worker, you can't afford to live there. And so the companies are increasingly having difficulty finding the workers they need, and they're looking to expand outside of the Bay Area. And increasingly, they're looking at markets on the East Coast.
So we have about a minute left, and Ali emails, let's say I wanted to enter the tech sector tomorrow. What do I need to do? What are the steps?
I would say a couple things. Look up Tech Talent South, look up CPCC's program, and look up UNC Charlotte's program. I think I would go explore all three of those. A lot of those organizations offer free courses where you can go and dip your toe in the water to experience what it's like to go code. There are a lot of good resources where you can go explore that.
And is it all about coding, or is there more to it than that?
I think there's
more to it than that.
Right. So I'm not sure what Fatima was going to mention, but we are actually working with Map Anything to actually integrate some of the coding into marketing. When you think about data informatics and what that data analytics is going to look like, we want to make sure that our marketing students, which is a huge opportunity to expand the taste and touch of the coding opportunity.
And you get the last word. Susan Gann Carroll, Director of Career and Technical Education at CMS. Dan Roselli, co-founder of Packard Place, co-founder and managing director of Queen City FinTech. Mark Vintner, senior economist with Wells Fargo. And Fatma Mili, professor and the dean of the College of Computing and Informatics at UNC Charlotte.